So, I would like to introduce Ryan Turner. He's going to present this session on CDLs and masking. Ryan Turner has his doctorate from Southern Methodist University of Law and his bachelor's in psychology from Edwards University. He served as a briefing attorney for the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals and a special assistant county attorney for Kendall County. He's the author of a book, A Comprehensive Overview of the Texas Criminal Justice System. He is also the deputy city attorney for Dripping Springs. And then what I believe his most important job right now, he is general counsel and director of the education for the Texas Municipal Courts Education Center. You know, and yes, he's well-rounded and well-versed, and please give him a warm welcome.
All right, good morning. I'll tell you what I think possibly my most important job is. I'm an expectant father. How about that? I have a 4-year-old son who will be 5 at the end of July, and I have a 8-month pregnant wife who experienced a Braxton Hicks contraction while at Walmart day before yesterday that might have changed the shopping experience for some of the people at Walmart from what I've heard. I asked her if she was going to have this baby while I was in El Paso. She's told me that she has asked the child to not release herself on her own recognizance, that it is her hope that the child will stay put until after August 4th, which is the evening that we have tickets to see Crowded House at Stubbs Barbecue. So I don't know if it's going to work out. You never know how those things play, but you never know. One more quick story, and then I'll get on the road. It was about this time last year that some of y'all may have joined us at the Legislative Update. How many of y'all attended the Legislative Update? If you went to Legislative Update, we had one in Lubbock, and my wife was involved in a minor fender bender, and she's not a bad driver, but she's also not necessarily she doesn't have a spotless record in terms of avoiding minor fender benders, and she managed somehow while at the veterinarian's office to back our car into a UPS truck, which is a relatively large truck. And, it's a bad deal when the guy who works for UPS gets out of his truck and starts yelling, "Ma'am, please don't," and you still back into the guy's UPS truck. I gave her a little bit of grief about that, especially because of the fact that not too recently she managed to also, she failed to maintain a safe and assured distance, according to the peace officer, when she ran into the back of a yellow cab. So I've told her that the yellow cab and the USPS truck, this is not a good combination. Anyway, she had to go back to the veterinarian's office this week, and no joke, just like Groundhog's Day, right as she's getting in her car, a USPS truck pulls in behind her. This time, she gets out of the car, and as she's looking out the back, all of a sudden, UPS driver jumps out of the back of jumps out of his vehicle and goes, "Not you again!" Small world, huh? All right. We're here to talk about CDLs. Let me go ahead and say this. Make sure everyone knows what I'm talking about. What is a CDL? What's that stand for? Commercial driver's license. Very good. All right. How about masking? What's that mean? Anybody know? It's not a Texas term. It's actually a term that comes from federal regulations. It's actually a defined term. Masking is when you conceal the conviction or the wrongdoing of a holder of a commercial driver's license when it relates to their commercial driver's license itself. Okay, so we're talking about traffic offenses committed by CDL holders. That's what we're talking about. Things that conceal it. Now, the reason why we're offering this class this year is because we've done, back in 2003 or 4, my memory fails me exactly which of those years it was. I've been here for 10. Back in 03, 04, when this legislation was new, we had a pretty substantive discussion with everyone, judges, clerks, and prosecutors. How many of you were around back then and you remember the discussion on this topic? All right. Well, this is the second pass because, you know, we have a better understanding of this topic than we did back then. There's a lot of stuff that we have learned that we did not know. And so what we're going to do today is I'm probably going to shake the foundations of some of your understandings. And unless you've already done the webinar. Any of y'all were on the webinar last week? One. Okay. Well, this is, I did this webinar so it's archived so people can see it. But really what we found this year is I've given this presentation to clerks and Kevin Madison, one of our judges, Valerie Garcia, another judge. They've made a similar presentation to the judges, is that there's a lot of fundamental concepts related to this topic that are slightly misunderstood. So we're here to do a kind of like a, we're, consider this to be the second coat of paint. But you're going to find out that probably by the time I'm through talking to you this morning, I will have challenged some of your basic understandings of what is allowed and what is not allowed as it relates to CDLs and the topic of masking. All right. By the way, this is my son. He does not have a huge eye, nor is he cross-eyed, though he kind of appears to be in this one. I think he's having just a little too much fun with that magnifying glass. All right, let's go ahead and jump on in. What do the following have in common? All right, here we go. All right, come on in. Y'all can do it. We'll play a little Hollywood Squares, you can say. Upper left-hand corner, going for the block. All right, let's do it. Let's go ahead this way. Who's this guy? Did I just hear it? It's the baseball. No. Come on. Yogi Berra. All right, we got Yogi Berra. Okay. All right, let's go ahead and we'll go down here. That is absolutely not George Washington Carver. By any stretch of the imagination or philosophical confines. All right, who is this gentleman? Let's try this again. Watch the little red laser. Here we go. Who is? Rush Limbaugh. Okay, excellent. All right, now let's go ahead. We're going to move on up here. Maya Angelou. All right, okay. Who's this? And do not say Colonel Sanders. Do not say Colonel Sanders. Mark Twain. Anybody remember his real name? Samuel Clemens. All right. And just for, I think we might have you. Sir, are you a Samuel Clemens fan? You were very fast on the draw on that one. Okay. Just so you'll know, there is a chance that Samuel Clemens is going to be back in the New York Times bestsellers list because under the terms of his will, his autobiography could not be released for 100 years after his date, and that date just came last week. So he's got a new book out if y'all want to go check out some new Mark Twain. All right, finally. George Washington Carver. All right. Some people have, and what's he famous for? Not peanuts. He didn't invent peanuts. God invented peanuts now. Peanut butter. Okay, yes. Synthesizing. But, there wouldn't be a school-age child in America whose life would be the same without Dr. Carver. I am a huge fan of peanut butter. And I know my mom was, too, because that's a cheap way to feed a kid and a fast one, too. Here, eat this. And of course, if they act bad, you just don't give them any milk. Next thing you know, it's like they have concrete in their mouth. All right. What do all these folks have in common? They're famous. They're all famous? What else? Answer is, they're all from Missouri. Okay. All right. They're all from Missouri. Now, some people call it Missouri. Some people call it Missouri. Some people call it a Kaiser blade. Some people call it a sling blade. I call it Missouri. I called it Missouri once. Got in trouble with a person from Missouri. Said, don't call it Missouri. It's Missouri. Okay? Talked to someone else. They said, I don't know why we have such a big deal about it. Tomato, tomato, potato, potato. Let's call the whole thing off. Now, what, you know, and by the way, notably, this is also known as the Show Me State. The Show Me State. How many of y'all have been to Missouri? You been there? I don't think I have been there. Though I once had a dream once that I had committed a felony and I was sentenced to life eternal in Branson watching Mel Tillis. Actually, it's a joke, an absolute joke. I never had that dream. Okay, I'm lying. I had that dream. It's a true story. All right, here we go. So this is the funny thing. It's called the Show Me State. The question is, what can the Missouri, the Show Me State, tell us about the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Improvement Act, also known as FMCSIA? That's where all this masking stuff came from. All these regulations about CDLs came out of this FMCSIA. CSIA, police, federal government. Get a shorter acronym. Okay? So I'm going to be talking about FMCSIA throughout the presentation. And the answer is, what can they tell us about the FMCSIA? Well, apparently more than the state of Texas. Okay? Because something very interesting happened. Back in 2005, the state of Missouri decided to ask the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Improvement Act folks, or administration, they asked them to clarify what the regulations meant. Because every state had the responsibility of imposing the regulations or making sure that their state laws conformed with these regulations. All right. Well, the state of Texas did not ask for guidance because, like a proud man who does not have GPS, we do not stop and ask for instructions. We think we can just drive and drive and drive until finally we find our way where we're going, which is not necessarily true. By the way, my wife has figured out that since I have a smartphone, it actually has made me a bigger smart ass in terms of saying that I'm not going to stop for instructions. Why would I need, what? What does that person know there that Google Earth does not know? I've got an iPhone, baby. I can find anything. I can do anything now. I am unstoppable. I have the iPhone. All right. But this is what they did. They asked for questions. They asked for guidance. They asked for directions. And you know what? They got it. The federal government actually answered their questions. So what we're going to do today is I'm going to run you through a series of questions that were pondered by the federal government. The questions, of course, relate to Missouri law. We can't be too greedy about this now, can we? We can't expect the state of Missouri to ask questions about Texas law. But you're going to see, even though we're talking about Missouri, you'll see that these are Missouri-based questions. They shine a lot of light on things that you and I have been wondering for quite a period of time about this this whole masking stuff and our zero tolerance for commercial driver's license holders. Now, when I say zero tolerance, really, I want to make sure, are there any of you that are just really as green as a goat in the ballroom on this whole topic? I mean, have any of you been doing this like for less than a year? I didn't think so. We got one person? Okay. Well, I'm not, you know, or two people. All right. Well, listen, you know, I want to be true, you know, just like George W., I want to leave no child behind. I want to make sure everyone's coming with me on this. Okay. I'm going to have the complete populist stance. In the end, no one wins unless everyone wins. Okay. That's a little Bruce Springsteen for you. Okay, now listen, here's the deal. What we're really talking about here is deferred disposition and driving safety courses, because that is where our state laws say, zero, you're not getting it. Okay, now, only if we're talking traffic offenses. Look, we don't care if a person has tall weeds and they have a CDL, they get deferred. Okay, if they get accused of misdemeanor theft and it's in municipal court, okay, that too, they can get deferred. It's only if it involves offenses involving motor vehicle control. Okay, when they're driving that car, that is when the policies kick in. So I just want to make sure the zero tolerance is reflected by the fact that in your courts, hopefully you know this, and hopefully your judge knows this. I've already had one judge who's been sanctioned by the Commission on Judicial Conduct for running afoul of this. I have a feeling there are others out there, but I want to make sure you're clear on this. No deferred disposition, no driving safety course, no probation of any sort, no homemade pretrial diversion, nothing, okay? This is their options. Plead guilty, okay? Go ahead and plead guilty or no contest and appeal it. That's an option, okay? Or plead not guilty and set the case for trial. Those are your options on these types of cases. Now, let's go ahead and jump into some of these questions because they shine a lot of detail on this, and I'm going to ask for some participation on this. But first, let me just tell you what masking is. To make sure you're clear, if you've never seen, by the way, the article I've given you has all this stuff in it, and all of my PowerPoint slides, they're all online now. So I think some people like the slides. You can get those just by going to our webinar section at tmcc.com. But let's talk about what it is. Generally, for masking or diversion to occur, there must be a judgment of guilt. For example, masking may occur when the court holds the paperwork on a conviction for some reason and does not allow the state to take appropriate action, the state being like DPS. Okay? If you're sitting on the paperwork for too long, by the way, y'all know they've changed the law recently. You have a shorter period of time now to get that stuff in. How long is it, Kathy? 10 days? 10 days from the date of conviction? Seven. Now, let's go ahead and talk about this. 7 days from when is the real question. It needs to be from the date of final conviction. That means that there could be a judgment entered, but is a judgment final the day it's entered? Can they not appeal it? They have a 3-day window to appeal it. So you need. So really it is, it's going to be like 7 plus 3, see if it falls on a business day. There's a little bit of a bumper in there that you have to figure out. But keep in mind, that means that for you court clerks, it is important that you not sit on the paperwork, and that if it's a CDL case, you've got to be ready to report in a timely manner. Yes, ma'am. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds really, really bad. That sounds like masking. Yeah, that sounds like masking, and the judge has no authority to dismiss cases. The only person who has authority to dismiss the case is going to be your prosecutor, and the judge has to co-sign on it. It's a two-party check if you want to see a dismissal in a municipal court. Okay, so that would be masking. Yeah. Well, hold on. I want to stop for a second. Technically, under the federal definition, that's not going to be masking, as you're going to see, because there's not a judgment. Let me talk about what that is. One, it's not authorized by Texas law. Okay, that would be unethical. It would be the better way. And what you're going to see as I go through this presentation is that back in 2004, we really didn't understand this thing that well. So this is how we taught it. We taught that basically masking and ethics were one and the same thing. We even had a class called the Ethics of Masking. Okay. Well, guess what? It's like saying that the darkness of you know, the night, you know, let's say midnight of afternoons, okay? They're not. They're similar, but they're not the same. Let me go ahead and break this out. You're going to see that some things may not be masking, but that does not make them ethical. And you've got two separate things here. Now, also, there might be things that are being done by courts that are, you know, before this whole masking thing existed, we had ethics. At least we were supposed to. And the fact of the matter is, just because of the fact that it may not be masking does not mean. So I want you to think of this. I know we've got a marker board here. I want you to really leave this presentation thinking of this as a, you know, a two-prong issue. There's two prongs. Back in the old days, by which I mean 2003, remember that? George W. Bush was president back then. Barack Obama's president now. It's not that time has moved on. We have a new way of looking at things. This is the new way we look at this. Your first question is masking. Okay? If not, separate issue. Ethical. Okay? And guess what? We might even have this third branch, which is called legal. Okay? So I would suggest that the practice that you suggested, that's not legal, that's not ethical, may not be, but it is not masking. The one you've said to me, which is that the prosecutor just does what? Sets it on continuance until hell freezes over, until no one knows. Yeah, that's not ethical either. The court has a responsibility to timely adjudicate it. Guess who's going to be spanked on that? Your judge, not your prosecutor. Because the judge, under the canons of judicial conduct, has a duty to timely deal with cases. You cannot let these things sit till hell freezes over. That's how ticket fixing occurs, too, by the way. All right, well, first of all, your judge has gotten this presentation. This class was offered to judges this year. You know what you do? You say, you know what? There is this webinar that is up on the TMCEC website that you just absolutely must watch. Okay. Also, you can quote me on this. You can say, hey, I came back from clerk school, and Ryan Turner, the general counsel, said that postponing these cases indefinitely is unethical. It is unethical. And I can tell you I've had judges who have been spanked for not timely handling cases. Yeah. Ah, hold on. That's coming. All right, hold your hypotheticals. They're built in there. You know, we're not the only ones who had these questions. The people in Missouri had the exact same questions. They had the exact same issues. Okay, here we go. So we got our definition. Let's go a little bit further. You sit on the paperwork. Diversion may occur when the court allows a driver, after an adjudication of guilt, to perform alternative services, such as traffic school to get the conviction erased. What's that sound like? What's diversion sound like? Sounds like deferred. It sounds also like driving safety courses. Okay? All right, so let's go ahead and jump on in. Situation number one. And, Kathy, I am going to need you to help me watch my time today. So, all right. All right, here we go. That's cool. Here we go. Here we go. Question number one. CDL holder issued traffic citation in his private vehicle. A prosecutor reviews the records and determines there is a problem with the evidence and decides not to prosecute the case. So no charges are filed with the court. No conviction is entered. All right. First of all, I want to go ahead and just say this. This whole thing about them being in their personal vehicle is absolutely ridiculous. It doesn't matter. It does not matter. We want holistic data. Let me explain to you the policy. If someone is acting the fool on a Sunday night in the parking lot of a Allsup's in Amarillo, Texas, okay, and if on Thursday afternoon they're scheduled to drive a Winnebago, you know, from Lockhart to Pampa, okay, or let's say they're going to be driving that thing from, let's say they're going to be driving it from Anthony, Texas, all the way to Arkansas, okay? We want to know what they're up to even on weekends. If you have made the choice, because no one put a gun to your head and forced you to have a CDL. You wanted it because there was a job you wanted. And it was a prerequisite to having the employment. Well, with that employment and with that CDL comes a lot of responsibility. That's the new message. And part of it is holistic data. That means we don't want low-resolution data. We want high-resolution data. We want to know what you're doing when it comes to traffic no-nos all the time, 24/7, 365, if you're convicted. All right? Yeah, I do want to know. Because yeah, I do. And I want to know if he wears a seatbelt, and I want to know if he beats his wife, and I want to know all those things. When you are a public servant or when you have held yourself to a higher standard by choice, that's one of the consequences. And this policy came from the fact that back in the old days, you could have 15 CDLs from 15 states, and every time you got caught smoking crack in one state, you just surrendered one CDL and kept on trucking in the next. And all these rules have put an end to it. Because now, once you, even the little things, you know, failure to stop at the stop sign, that it adds up. There's a running tally score that disqualifies some of these people from being able to drive for a while. And if it's a big bad no-no, they jettison you from the program. You're out. You lose your CDL. Okay? But I used to hear this, and I want to make sure that you folks are not, that you know, look, these are criminal cases. These are criminal traffic cases. I know that there's a bunch of them, and that on some level, they might, and they're not. They don't have the same gravity as murder. But you need to understand something. Criminal cases have consequences. Even these do. And the consequences for these CDL holders is a heck of a lot higher. It's because, you're talking about someone's livelihood. I understand. It's true with DWI, too. When someone gets a DWI, guess what? They can be fired from their jobs, and when their employers learn that they got a DWI. Now, but is a DWI a big deal? It is. But it's a Class B misdemeanor. It's not a Class A misdemeanor. It's not a state jail felony. These are crimes. Now, that's the one thing, because back in the old days, these Class C misdemeanors didn't have that many consequences. So I just want to make sure this whole thing about the private vehicle, we used to hear a lot about that. Oh, Ryan, but it's just not fair because they're in the private vehicle. Once again, if someone is going to be taking the Ebola virus through your neighborhood, and if on earlier in that month they were acting like fools in their personal motor vehicle in the parking lot of a Walmart or what have you, there is a public interest in knowing if these people make bad decisions. And that's the policy behind it. But on this one, let me ask you, is this masking? Prosecutor reviewed the records, determines there's insufficient evidence, decides not to go forward with the case, no convictions entered. Is that masking? Anyone want to say it's masking? Going once, going twice, one person says it's masking. Answer is, this is not masking. And the reason it's not masking is because, once again, it's the state, in a criminal case, the state has the burden of proof, and they have to prove that case beyond a reasonable doubt. If the prosecutor determines there's insufficient evidence, then, and they decide not to go forward on a case, that's not masking, that's prosecutorial discretion. All right, now, let's go back. I hear cases of prosecutors setting cases forever. Once again, now, does that mean that this is that unethical? Well, no, it's not unethical. If the evidence is really not there, and how about the cop has moved on? I can't prove it. I don't have the evidence. It's actually the ethical thing to do is the deep six of that case. From a prosecutor's perspective, that's the ethical thing to do. All right? All right, question number two. CMV operator is issued a traffic citation for careless and imprudent driving. The prosecutor files charges for careless and imprudent driving. Case goes to trial, and contrary evidence is presented by the operator to show he was not driving in a careless and imprudent manner. And the court ultimately dismisses the case. Now, this is a little disturbing to us as Texans, because first of all, should judges ever dismiss cases at trial? No. There is something that is called a directed verdict. Okay? Do y'all know what a directed verdict is? The directed verdict is when you're at trial and the state has says the state rests. Okay, they have to say that. When they are done submitting their evidence, they're supposed to say the state rests its case. When the state rests its case, the defendant can then make what's called a directed verdict. What that means, makes a motion for a directed verdict, which means that they're stating that the state has failed to prove a required element of the offense. And there's no need to go forward because the state just said they're done, and you can't say you're not, you can't go on once you say you're done. Once you're done, you're done. No more evidence can be presented. And that is one way that judges can, it's not a dismissal, it's a directed verdict. Okay. Now, some judges will actually, on their own motions, enter directed verdicts. They're sitting there and they're looking for the elements of the offense to have been presented. And if the, you know, the prosecutor forgets to prove that it occurred within the territorial limits of the city, you forgot to offer evidence on that. You never asked that question. And because you didn't ask, some judges will say, all right, directed verdict. They won't even let the case go on. Yeah. It's not, because the equivalent is the same as an acquittal, because you failed to prove your case beyond a reasonable doubt. That's her question is, how is it reported? It's not reported, because it's going to be the same thing as an acquittal. But I want you to read this case that way, because we know that in Texas, judges don't have the ability to dismiss cases. Would this be masking? What if it just said at the end, contrary evidence was presented and the defendant was found not guilty? Would that be masking? Why not? They have to have the judgment. The judgment is critical. The judgment is a magical piece of paper. You have to have that judgment. Okay, there is no judgment, and in this case, that's the reason why. Is it masking? No, still not masking. Look at the reasons here. Federal regulations require a conviction. In this case, the court found that there was flawed or lacking evidence to convict the one of the offense cited. There were no accepted actions taken by the court to otherwise circumvent the guidelines. There was no masking or diversion. Ultimately, the driver in this case received his or her day in court. Okay, this is important, clerks. Let's not get so blinded by masking that we forget that the reason why these courts exist is so that people can have their day in court. Have you noticed that people will come and they're all pissy at the window and that they're hostile to you, but the second they've had their chance to go to court, even though they end up falling on their sword and getting fined anyway, the only thing they really wanted was to have their opportunity to say their piece. It's like they went to confession or something. Or it's like, all right, now, I'm going to say this. Yeah, I was speeding, but you need to know my kid really had to pee. All right. I'll knock $50 off the fine. Boom. Guilty. Next. All right. But there's something about that. So don't lose sight of the fact. This whole thing is not the masking rules. The federal government is not trying to usurp the right of Texans to have their day in court, their ability to have trials, their ability to be found not guilty by either a jury or a judge. That's not the intent of the federal government. Okay, scenario 3. CMV operator is issued a traffic citation for improper lane change in a CMV. Prior to the citation being filed with the court, the prosecutor determines to only file the charge as defective muffler. Final conviction is for a defective muffler, and that is the only charge ever signed by the prosecutor or filed with the court. Is this masking? All right, now this one you seem unified on. Okay, you seem pretty unified on this. You going to say no? Anyone else want to say no? You going to say no? Anyone else? Looks like 2 to 48 right now. Going once, going twice. This is not masking. Both of you ladies were right on the money. Let's go through this. It's not a violation. And here's the reason why. Remember, where does masking begin? Is there a conviction of a traffic offense? Okay, was there a conviction of a traffic offense? Well, if there was, it was for muffler. Okay? And secondly, you have to ask you this too. Was there any effort on the part of the court? By court, I mean you or the judge, to slow down the reporting, to not report to DPS. No, that didn't happen either. Now, here's the funny thing. Let's go back to Mr. Turner's magical fork over here. Okay, so is it masking? No, it's not masking. Okay, is it legal? Can prosecutors change the charge? Absolutely they can. Is it ethical? We don't know. We don't know from this. Okay, if he had a defective muffler in addition to the other offense. Well, okay, hold on. That's what we don't know. That's what we do not know. And I'm not saying this is ethical, mind you. Because, let me tell you this, your prosecutors only have, I'm going to teach you all the prosecutorial ethics you need to know. Are you ready? Because there's only two rules that apply to prosecutors. So I know you can learn these. Here we go. One, a prosecutor shall not encourage a defendant in a criminal case to waive their rights. You don't need a lawyer. You don't want a trial. No. Okay, you can't do that. Secondly, a prosecutor may not prosecute an offense in which there is no probable cause. Uh-oh. So in other words, could this be unethical? Could this be a violation of the rules of disciplinary conduct? Absolutely. If there is not one iota of evidence to suggest it. Now I'm going to say this to you. Okay, you know, do you think that the defendant's going to be filing the grievance on this? Do you think judges want to get into this? Nope. Okay. Do you think that there are people every day who plead to crimes that they did not commit just because they want to get a lesser punishment? Absolutely. That's called the realities of the criminal justice system and plea bargaining. Okay. But I want to make something clear on this too. That it's still not masking. And only two of y'all got this right. And the rest of you, that's the reason why we're here today, is because remember, you got to pivot on this topic. You have to say, you know, one, is it masking? It may not be masking, but you still know it's not right, but still you wanted to say it was masking. That's what I want to wean you off of. I want you to think now, okay, is it masking? Okay, it may not be masking. It still does not appear right. There's something wrong about this. Yeah. Now, and that's the thing, but I want to go back to this lady's comment because she's right. There's something still, it wasn't even alleged. And that's where horse trading is part of lawyering. And I'm going to say this, being a prosecutor in a municipal court, I've been doing it since 2003, is not like prosecuting in any other court there is, okay? Because in municipal court, you're up against 98% pro se defendants that they don't have lawyers, okay? So the prosecutor is even more important in a municipal court than in a county or district court as a justice doer because they have the obligation to see that justice is done. And in a way, have y'all not noticed this? It's almost like sometimes the prosecutor becomes more of a defense lawyer. They have like almost like a hybrid function because they're so there to see that justice is done. It's a safety mechanism. Because can the judge do anything for you? No, they can accept your plea and then sentence you within the range of sentencing. The prosecutor, on the other hand, can change the charge, dismiss the charge, modify the charge, or recommend a really sweet punishment, something that might be a lot lower than the standard window fine. I've recommended $1 plus court costs before on cases because I think the merits of the case are just so questionable, you know, or I thought they offered me good mitigating reasons, okay? All right, let's go to the next one. Situation 4, the CDL holder has issued a traffic citation for excessive speed in a private vehicle, speeding 75 miles an hour in a 60-mile-an-hour zone. After the original charge is filed with the court, the prosecutor amends the original charge to speeding 65 miles an hour in a 60-mile-an-hour zone. This is familiar. In fact, this is the one that one of y'all wanted to talk about a minute ago, if I'm not mistaken, all right? Final conviction is for speeding 65 miles an hour in a 60-mile-an-hour zone. Question of the hour, is this masking? I hear one yes, and it sounded like a male voice. Let's see. I think there's only three guys in here except me. So, all right. So let's do this. Let's see a show of hands. How many of you think that this is masking? Okay, masking. Okay, I got three or four hands. Okay, how about not masking? Okay. How many of you, raise your hand if you did not participate in Mr. Turner's democratic process just now. You just completely skipped out on it. Okay. All right. Is this masking? Because by the way, is this not one of the most, this is something y'all see all the time. How many of you not seen that? A prosecutor will come in, the ticket says this. They go, okay, I'm going to file an amended complaint. We're going to do this by complaint. And they change the charge by complaint. And the only thing they're changing, it's not the offense. See, the offense bothered y'all on the muffler because you wondered, well, that wasn't even part of the ticket. Okay? Let me tell you, by the way, I want to go back to that one about the muffler. We did have a prosecutor that was disciplined for changing CMV offenses, these masking offenses. He was changing the horse and buggy violations. Now, we don't even have horse and buggy violations in Texas, but in Pennsylvania they do. Okay? You know, Amish community, all that stuff. And there's this thing, it's like, what's called like a light stick. I don't even know. I call it a light stick. It's not really. It's just a stick that has a light on it, thus the term light stick. And it is something you have to have on the back of your buggy at night. He was turning commercial driver's license offenses involving 18-wheelers into light stick violations. He lost his bar card. Because there's only two rules you have to follow when you're a prosecutor. One, you cannot encourage defendants to waive their rights. Two, you cannot prosecute offenses in which you have no probable cause. Let me give you one that y'all are a lot more familiar. Remember the Duke lacrosse case? That prosecutor prosecuted these Duke lacrosse players for sexual assault. He knew early on there was no evidence. He knew that he had no probable cause. He didn't care. He was up for re-election. Okay? The alleged victim was African American. He had historically won elections by courting the African American vote. He needed the African-American vote to win re-election, and he decided he'd put politics above principle or ethics. Okay? That guy ultimately is no longer a lawyer either. He lost his bar card. Y'all didn't respond to it. Y'all do remember the Duke lacrosse case? This was a big deal about 4 years ago. Okay. All right. Now, so is this masking? This is the typical, the charge was 75 and a 60. Okay? It's amended to be 65 and a 60. Okay, is it masking? Okay, most of you saying no. Guess what? You're right. That's not masking. Okay? Still not masking. Okay. Hopefully you're starting to see a clear trend here, ladies and three gentlemen. Okay? Yeah, hopefully you're getting it. The trend is this. The trend is it's not what the prosecutor does. Masking is something that the court is going to do. Prosecutors may engage in unethical horse trading. Prosecutors and judges and clerks can complicitly be involved in illegal or unauthorized legal practices, such as pretrial diversions. Okay? Okay, hold on. I'm going to go to you first. Yeah. Yep. There has to be a conviction. Yes, sir. Ooh, that's not good, too. Judges are supposed to be neutral arbiters. They're not supposed to be saying, let me go ahead and tell you what I think you really want to do today to stay on my good side. There can't be any situation. My wife does that to me all the time, but that is not something that judges should not be doing that. That's not good. Yeah. That's an excellent question. The question is, what's the point if there are that many loopholes? There aren't that many loopholes. We didn't teach it to you right in 2003, and now we're teaching it to you right. Okay, we didn't understand it in 03, first of all. We honestly thought the ethics and masking were one singular plank. What we have now learned upon closer examination on instant replay, okay, is that the ball did break the imaginary plane. No, what we're saying here is that on closer examination, it's more complicated. The federal government is not going to get up in the grill of prosecutors and tell them you can't plea bargain. First of all, that would destroy the criminal justice system. Look, can you imagine what it would be like? You know, let me put it to you this way. The criminal justice system without plea bargaining is like bars without happy hour, okay? There is no way you're going to make the criminal justice system. Okay, we're going to set all these cases for trial. How long are y'all going to be able to keep in it? How many of y'all going to quit when I tell you all these cases are going to trial? All of them. You don't have enough. Well, they are going. That is that, because a lot of them are going to trial now. But think about it, if they couldn't plea bargain. So though the prosecutor's ability to plea bargain has been somewhat eluded or the judge's ability has seriously, the court is handcuffed on this. The court has no power now, okay? The prosecutor has some. Now, I want to tell you why this really does. How many of you still this bothers you? You think this is unethical? How many, because, you know, Kathy and Mark and Katie, you know, we take pissy phone calls from clerks on this. They call, they're not happy. It's like, ah, they don't like it. Does this bother you? Okay, it bothers you. Let me go, allow me to inoculate you. I will shoot some sunlight into the room. It's going to be like an anesthetic, and you'll say, ah, I feel all better now. Okay, look, I want you to think of it this way. Now, keep in mind, I need to make a couple of qualifiers. One, I am not a physicist. Two, I did graduate from Vernon High School in 1990 without ever taking physics. But I want you to follow me on this. If a person, let's go back on, take a look at the fact pattern here. Okay, 75 into 60, and they were convicted of going 65 into 60. Okay, the speed limit is 60. Okay, the last time I checked, for you to go 75 miles an hour, at some point in time, you must have been going 65 miles an hour. Let me say that again. For you to have been going 75 miles an hour, at some point in time, you must have been going 65 miles an hour. You don't even have to have watched a lot of Star Trek to get this one. Speed is incremental. It builds upon itself. You got to go 65, 66, 67, 68, 69, 70, 71, 72, 73, 74, 75. There is no 65 to 75. It does not happen. Just like I told my wife, UPS trucks don't come out of nowhere. Okay, neither do yellow cabs, okay? You see what I'm saying? So from the prosecutor's perspective, I have no problem doing this plea bargain because I'm not lying. I have probable cause to believe that the person is going that speed because you can't get to 75 unless you were at 65. Why do they want this? What is in it for the CDL holder? Why do they want this plea bargain so bad? Yeah, and here's the deal. We need to stress this. In this scenario that says they're in a private vehicle, okay? But in Texas, I'm not sure if it's points. I know it's in the CMV chapter. If you commit a serious traffic offense, is what they call it, under the commercial motor vehicle chapter, if you're 10% over the posted speed limit, it's no longer just speeding. It's now a serious traffic offense. So they want to get it down below 10%. They'll plea out at 9. They want the 9%. Because at that point, they can take the conviction, but it still doesn't count as a serious traffic offense. Do you follow me on this? So that's the reason why you shouldn't be stunned when you see people trying. Of course, you got to have someone who's savvy enough to know this. What we're talking about is really arcane stuff that only wonks understand. The average citizen has no clue why anyone would ever want to plea down from, 75 to 65. The answer is because you may have to pay a fine, you may have a conviction, but it may not have the same implications on your ability to drive that CMV. That's the answer. Yeah. Okay, excellent. She's saying that, are we getting to the emotional stuff? What motivates prosecutors varies, you say, is it emotion? It's not emotion like we're watching an episode of Oprah, okay? It's not like that type of emotion, but sometimes it is. Sometimes it is. You can quote me on this. If the United States of America in the next 10 years bans the use of cell phones while driving, okay, it will be because of Oprah Winfrey. You can quote me on that. Have y'all seen what she's up to? She's created a nonprofit. She's doing PSAs. She's going to pump her own personal money to change people's attitudes about that. She's showing stories about people dying, and it makes them feel emotional. Some prosecutors will give someone a break because it's emotional. But some people are going to do it because, one, they got 3,200 files in front of them. They're prosecuting in the Houston Municipal Court. The river moves fast, and if they don't, they just got to get on to the next case. It's all about moving the docket. For some high-volume courts, it's all about moving the docket. Now, here's the other one. Some of them just don't care. It's not that they're moved by emotion. They don't care. And they're going to say, what do I have to do to get you out here so I don't ever have to see you again? Because I've seen that response, too. The other one is, oh, my gosh, if they go to trial, I'm going to have a trial. I don't want to have a trial because I don't know how to have a trial because I've never had a trial. Okay? You got fear. So that's, okay, that's fear. I mean, that's a fear emotion. Okay, so it's a whole gamut of different things that motivate the prosecutor. That does not bother me, and here's the reason why. If they come to me and say, Mr. Turner, I've been driving a CMV for 22 years. I have never had a traffic offense. This is my first one. I have brought to you today my driving record to show you what I'm saying is true. You know, I'm asking today that you change that charge. I say part of justice is mercy, and that's true too. I mean, that is true. So it's not just that they're going soft. It might be that there's a legitimate reason for this. Okay, here's scenario five. CDL holders operating in non-commercial vehicles issued a traffic citation for failure to yield right-of-way. Prosecutor files charge for failure to yield right-of-way. Court convicts person of failure to yield right-of-way. And the conviction is posted in the driver's record and allows a driver improvement program in lieu of having the director assess points on the Missouri driving record. Now, this is really hard for us Texans because at the end, we don't know what the heck they're talking about. What is this? Yeah, I don't understand any of this. So let me go ahead and try to translate this to you. Person is convicted of failure to yield right away. We do have that. You've all seen that filed in your court, hopefully, okay? Now, what happens next is it's posted in the driving record. That means that there is a conviction that is supposed to be reported. Now, this is where it gets a little weird, but allows a driver improvement program in lieu of having the director assess points. Now, in the state of Missouri, it is the director of the driving agency, probably their equivalent of DPS, that assesses it, okay, the extra points. In Texas, look at this. What they've done, though, is they allow them to take a driver improvement program. What's that sound like? That's DSC. That is absolutely DSC. So let's go ahead and read it this way. Forget about the director for a second, okay? Well, hold on. I want to be fair to this question because, one, I know the answer. There's two issues here. Let's read it again. Failure to yield right-of-way, the conviction is posted in the driver's record, so there is a reporting, but they allow the driver improvement program in lieu of having the director assess points on the Missouri driving record. So there's two parts to this question, but let me ask you, is this masking? Okay. Is there anyone in here who does not think this is masking? The court is. Okay, it's masking. She says it's masking because the court's allowing the driver improvement program. Okay. All of us, you know, heck, we barely understand Texas law. Now we're trying to master Missouri law. Okay. Okay. Now watch how the federal government answered this question. They said the failure to assign points does not violate the federal regs, because guess what? They don't care about points. Points and surcharges are all state business. That's up to the states, okay? However, if the federal reg required the imposition of a disqualification, or as my son would call it, a timeout, okay, then that would actually, this whole thing would have been, it would have violated the federal regs. Most importantly, though, what we do see here is that allowing the driver improvement program, that's masking. Okay, so it doesn't even matter what you call it. I want to say this too. In Texas, if the left hand doesn't get you, the right hand will. And this is what I mean by that. We have courts that have tried to create their own probation programs, and then they say, well, we didn't violate the law because we didn't give them deferred or DSC. We gave them Chigachigook, Chewbacca, Yoda. We gave them yogurt. We gave, you know, whatever. They'll call it whatever they want to. They typically will call it a pretrial diversion. And then here's the problem with that. Under Texas law, you're required to collect court costs. And if you didn't collect the court costs, now you've got the Comptroller of Public Accounts potentially coming after your city. And if you did collect the court costs, now there's a record that you gave them probation and you masked the conviction. So you can't win on this one. You're either going to rob the state of Texas or you're going to violate the federal regs. And so that's one thing y'all got to keep it between the lines on this. There's none of this local justice stuff. You know, how about this? I'm going to put it on the trial docket for 6 months, and if you're a good boy at the end, I'll let you make a contribution to the community and we'll let this case go. Oh, no. That would be bad too. Okay? That would be bad too. All right. Now, let's take a look at this. Situation number six. CMV operators issued a traffic citation for operating a CMV while suspended, revoked, or withdrawn. Prosecutor files charge operating CMV while license suspended, revoked, withdrawn. Final conviction operating CMV while license suspended, revoked, or withdrawn. Okay. Later, court allows attorney for CMV operator to withdraw original plea and conviction and conviction. The plea and conviction are withdrawn. And after a new court hearing, the court ultimately enters a conviction for improper CDL class endorsement. That's long and drawn out. Let me simplify it for you. They're accused of A, they're prosecuted for A, they're convicted for A. No, it does not appear to be an appeal, but this is going to be the slide I'm going to use to talk about appeals. What it looks like to me is we're going to convert it to Texas language. The closest thing we have to this is it's a motion for a new trial. We do have that. You can make a motion for a new trial and try the case again. And let's say the second time around they're not convicted of the same thing. Well, once again, accused of A, prosecuted for A, convicted of A, motion for a new trial on A, they're tried again, but on the second time through, they're not convicted of A, they're convicted of B. Is that... Nope, that's not nothing about trial de novo. And this, no, it's in the same court. But the second time through, after the motion for a new trial, somehow the defendant was accused of what might be a lesser included offense. Maybe the second time through they were facing two charges. Okay, is this masking? Okay, she says yes. No. All right. Answer is not a violation of CFR 384.226, because the court vacated or withdrew the original conviction. Remember, it's only when the conviction is final and you don't timely submit it to DPS, that's when it's masking. Now, this is hard for us to fathom because we don't have any laws that would allow you to really do this in Texas. Okay, but it begs some real questions. One, what about those dadgum leapfrog appeals where people will come into municipal court, plead guilty, post their bond, take it up to county, and then they get deferred adjudication. Not deferred disposition, it's Big Brother, deferred adjudication. One of the things that is very disturbing right now is that in Texas law, there is zero tolerance in Chapter 45 for CDL holders. But in terms of CDL holders in county court, there is a window of opportunity because there is no express language saying no deferred adjudication for CDL holders. Does that sound... Yeah, that's true. Let me ask you something. Do you think that's masking? If I can go get 42... Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. That's masking. Do you think that the federal government knows that loophole is there? No, they have no clue. They don't study... No. The federal government does not study the law of all 50 states. It's this duty of the state of Texas to conform their regulations and laws to the federal policy. We are probably not in compliance. Now, I'm going to give you one definition that defends the Texas system. Under the federal regs, it says that a masking occurs in a trial court of original jurisdiction. And if you think about it, is the county court the trial court of original jurisdiction? No, it's not. And that's the loophole that I think that the bureaucrats in Austin are banking on. Because if the federal government decides we're in violation, we lose a portion of our federal highway funding. And that's going to be the argument that may sooner or later happen. But I just want you to think of this. This is not considered a violation. But it also appears to be bizarre. I will also tell you that, you know, that loophole is still there. And as long as it's there, I don't fault CDL holders from trying to use it. I don't. Okay? Now, if I was advising a county judge, though, I would be saying don't do it. Because... I think it's masking, okay? And it definitely violates the spirit of what they're trying to do. The fact of the matter is, think about this. You can have more appeals of a speeding case in Texas than you can of capital murder. If you're convicted of capital murder and sentenced to death, you get one direct appeal to the Court of Criminal Appeals and you're done. Okay, on a speeding case, you can be tried in municipal court, be convicted, tried again, trial de novo, be convicted, appeal it again to the Court of Appeals, tie it up there, and then if they don't go for it, you can then ask for PDR to be granted by the Court of Criminal Appeals. Okay? All right. They do know it. Well, they're just not very good. The answer, yeah, are you a court of record? That's the question. That's a great question. In a court of record, you're hosed because there is no trial de novo, so you're not going to get any advantage. How fair is that, too, that you have less opportunity, you have an unequal justice based off where you get the ticket and what court it's filed in? So, in other words, if you are, you know, in Austin, Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, or one of these, or El Paso, a municipal court of record, you get busted, you're out of luck, man, because you can't do a leapfrog appeal. There is no trial de novo out of a court of record. Okay, but if you're a justice court, any justice court, or most municipal courts, you have all these opportunities that some people don't have. Yes? Okay, then under the federal regs, that would be masking. But they still don't have a prohibition. But let me tell you the big thing for them. You can't get 4212 deferred adjudication on DWI, driving while intoxicated, in a county court. You just can't get it. Part of that means that keeps us in compliance with the federal regs about zero tolerance, no masking. But what about these other things that end up? See, the federal government just doesn't understand that Class C misdemeanor traffic cases that begin with a ticket in a justice court can end up being tried again in a county court. They just don't know that, not yet. Okay, couple questions between Missouri and the feds. Why does the state disqualify driver's privileges when a traffic ticket's received in a personal vehicle? And the answer is they want holistic data. They don't care, okay? It's about public safety. Because remember I talked to you about 15 CDLs from 15 states. I get caught with a crack pipe in one. Doesn't matter. I still got 15 more. I still got 14 CDLs. Okay? That's how we crack down on this. Finally, why is the department, they're talking about in Texas terms, DPS, why are they so strict? The answer is because it is a profession. Let me stress this. These drivers are professional drivers and should be held to a higher standard. That's the whole thing. You know, they're a profession, just like judges. Saying, you know, well, I wasn't a judge when I got in that barroom fight. I wasn't wearing my robe. No, does not matter. Once you're a judge 24/7, 365. Once you have that CDL and you're driving anything that's a motor vehicle, you're going to be held to a higher standard. And that's the reason why if you've got any family members who used to be truckers or used to drive school buses and are no longer doing that line of work, they need to deep six that CDL. They got to get rid of that thing as fast as they can. Y'all have seen that happen too. People come in there and they go, I don't even need this anymore. Too bad. You should have gotten rid of it. Okay? You know, it's like Superman saying, I don't even need this kryptonite anymore. No, you should have gotten rid of it. Okay? Or the one that's even more heartbreaking, the person gets the ticket and then they go get a CDL the next day and then they come to the municipal court saying, can I have deferred disposition? No. Because remember, it's at the time of the offense or at the time of the request. You hold a CDL, zero tolerance, okay? There's no CDL surrender anymore. They can't, not anymore. They used to. Before all these regs went into effect, that was the problem. So essentially, the CDL program is administered by the states, but it is a federal program that we all have to follow the federal rules, and the only way that we're going to get data and the only way that we're going to hold these people's feet to the fire and keep them accountable is going to be if you do your jobs as clerks and make timely reports. That's the critical part. I know you might not believe this, but you might be saving somebody's life. It might even be your own or somebody you know, okay? Because that little piece of holistic data in the big picture might disqualify the driver and take them off the road at a point in time in which we none of us want them behind the wheel. Yeah. Okay. They're hosed because it now says that used to be allowable. Y'all remember when that used to be okay? They changed the law so that that's no longer okay. It's now at the time of the offense or at the time of the request. If you have a CDL, you're denied. You're not eligible. Last question. Well, the answer is I don't know because it all gets reported back to DPS and it goes on their driving history. It might ultimately result in their disqualification from being able to drive for a period. These are not the same as you killed someone in your CMV, or you were smoking crack while you were driving, or you were DWI. Those are automatic disqualifiers. For just common traffic violations, these are not disqualifiers. They hurt you, and they might add up to a temporary disqualification, but not a permanent disqualification. Yeah, they do have information on, that relates to that on the DPS website. All right, folks, that's my time. Thank you to you in the state of Missouri. I'll talk to you later. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to have a short break if we can get everyone back here at 9:15. Okay, enjoy.